This is To Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and today we're going to talk about regenerative therapies for joints. My guest is Dr. Chris Centeno. He is a board-certified pain management and physical medicine and rehab specialist. He's a developer of the Regenix stem cell procedures and doing some really amazing, innovative work. Welcome, Dr. Centeno.
Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Okay, so I interviewed you about 2 years ago, and we talked about what you're doing. And for the benefit of all the people who didn't hear that interview, let's review what it is you're doing. You do something that is certainly not available here in the Southwest Washington and Northwest Oregon. So you don't replace joints.
No, instead we try to use the patient's own stem cells to try to help the patient avoid the need for more invasive surgery. Now, that could be a joint replacement. That might be, instead of that, a shoulder rotator cuff surgery or a torn ACL.
Mm-hmm.
So we do lots of different stem cell-based procedures that are injections to try to get the tissues to heal rather than ripping them out and trying to replace them.
Mm-hmm. And why is it a problem? People have become pretty much blasé about replacing joints. No big sweat. I'm getting a new knee. I mean, they say it like they're having a drink.
Yeah, and it's funny because it is a much bigger deal than that. For instance, some recent research shows that you have a huge increase in heart attack and stroke risk by about 25 to 30 times for the first couple months after a hip or knee replacement. So not double, not triple, but 25 times. In addition to that,
and that's the number one killer in the United States.
It is.
So maybe all these procedures is actually contributing to that number continuing to go up no matter what we do.
They certainly could be. That research was done about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
So big procedures, I mm-hmm. call them surgical amputation of the joint and then insertion of a prosthesis.
Mm-hmm.
So you might imagine if you think of it that way, it's a pretty big procedure to amputate a whole joint and then to put in something else.
And so you use or you prefer to use a patient's own stem cells. Why?
Yeah, there's a couple choices that you could use. You could use embryonic cells. We've not chosen to go that direction. You could use someone else's adult stem cells. The problem there is that they can be taken out by the host immune system.
By taken out, you mean like killed? Killed?
Right. They can be killed by the host immune system.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just like any tissue that's not your own. Or even, for that matter, any foreign objects, metal, plastic, your body can reject all of it.
It can. In fact, that's one of the huge issues brought up recently with hip and knee replacements is that we're noticing that there are patients out there that are allergic to many of these materials that we're using. A number of different studies in the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons meetings this last few years on that very issue of what's called metallosis.
Mm-hmm. So people are reacting to the implant.
They are. In fact, right now the recommendation is if the patient has any jewelry allergy, meaning they know they're sensitive to jewelry, that the surgeon should be concerned that using any metal in the prosthesis, the patient may actually need to be allergy tested before the implant goes in.
Oh, I don't think that's done.
It's not commonly done, but I got to tell you, I've seen patients on the other end after they've had a joint replaced and have a metal allergy, and they are pretty miserable.
And then what can you do?
Not much other than reoperate the patient and take out the joint.
But what would you put in instead?
Yeah, and then you've got to try to find some prosthesis that has something they're not allergic to. And if that's not the case, then there's not much that can be done. There's also recently a lot of concern in many different publications on what are called wear particles.
And what is that?
Wear particles are, if you think about it, any non-organic joint is going to wear over time. The more active you are, the more wear you get, the more wear particles you get. So basically, these are just little particles that accumulate as the joint starts to wear out with activity. And the problem is that many of these, for instance, this last couple of years, there was a really big push towards minimally invasive hip replacements called the Birmingham hip. And it was a little less invasive. You took out less of the hip joint, but it was a metal-on-metal prosthesis. And there have been huge issues seen. I mean, surgeons go in to reoperate these things and replace them, and you know the joint is black with metal shavings.
Whoa, black sounds like a corrosion.
Yeah, it's not such a good thing. And in many of these patients, they've detected high levels of serum cobalt and chromium. You know, 3, 4, 5 times normal levels. So
from the prosthesis?
From the prosthesis, yes.
What about if it's made out of ceramic? Isn't that one of the materials that they're using?
Yeah, ceramic is a bit better. It'll still produce wear particles, but you're not going to get as much metal. Now, many of the ceramic prostheses also have metal components in them, but if it was a true ceramic, that would be a bit better. And there are joint prosthesis companies trying to figure this out. They're trying to produce low wear particle joints right now. And there are a few new ones on the market that are lower, and they're getting better and better, but the issue is it's not a problem that can be completely solved, because anything I put in you and you walk on 10,000 times is obviously mm-hmm. going to cause wear.
Okay, well, that's certainly a problem. But there are other problems, too. There are a number of deaths that are directly related to joint replacements.
There are. We did one study for one of the papers we published, and we looked through the Medicare database for just the year 2008, and there were 17,500 serious complications coded as related to the joint replacement surgery and 5,000 deaths that were coded as related to joint replacement surgery in that Medicare database. And I realize that only represents a slice of the population that has Medicare. We have patients getting joints younger and younger now, so probably half of all joints put in are below Medicare age.
So if those, well, and one would expect, though, that people Medicare age would be more medically fragile to begin with than a younger person? So they might have a higher percent that have a bad outcome, but if it's at all the same as that group, that's a pretty big number.
You know, it is, and the other thing I think to be concerned about is age. Once you get over 80, the likelihood of a serious complication, including death, goes way, way up. So most surgeons will recommend that their patients get a joint replacement sometime after 65 and before 75, because as you get older, those risks go up.
It seems crazy. I mean, the 93-year-old, I mean, one of my friends' mother just had a hip replacement. I think she's 93 or 94, and I couldn't imagine why anyone would want to traumatize someone at that age.
Yeah, many surgeons won't operate on them that old unless they're very special patients. Now, sometimes you obviously see patients that are that old who are just in incredible shape.
Sure, very active and want to maintain that activity.
Yeah, but for the most part, most surgeons won't operate them that old.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about what you have to offer is really an alternative to all that with none of the downside.
It is. So basically, we take the patient's own stem cells, concentrate or grow them to bigger numbers, and then place them back into the joint. And again, we treat obviously patients with bad knees and hips, but also we treat other issues like torn rotator cuffs or torn ligaments like ACLs, things like that.
How about funky necks?
Yep, we've treated necks as well with various mm-hmm. technologies, everything from stem cells to platelets.
Okay, now there's if you have to take the stem cells out, where do you take them out? And then can you get it? Do you have to come to where you are? You're in Boulder, Colorado.
Yes, so we've trained about 20 physicians around the country. We've even been talking to some folks in the Pacific Northwest, but that hasn't yet panned out, who can do this procedure and at least the same-day procedures. Now, we also offer a procedure where we culture the cells to bigger numbers out of a clinic we work out of in Grand Cayman. But the same-day procedure can be done by any of those clinics, including us here in Boulder, Colorado.
But there's a downside to that, right? If the worse the joint is, the less successful if you take the cells out and put them right back in without growing them.
Yeah, it's interesting. And we just, one of the things that we've been able to do this last few years because of some very kind entrepreneurial philanthropy through a billionaire has been to kind of really expand our research operations. And we now have a full-time biostatistician that looks at all of the data in our treatment registry. And interestingly enough, once we got up to very large numbers of treated knee patients with the same-day procedure, the severity issue that we were seeing before kind of washed out. So basically before, we thought that if you had more severe arthritis, you wouldn't do as well with a same-day procedure. More recently, as we looked at very large numbers of patients who had the same-day knee procedure, the patients with severe arthritis were doing as well as those with mild arthritis.
Oh, so this is an update from last time.
It is a significant update, yes.
Is that holding true for other joints as well? Hips and shoulders?
We're just pulling down the data to look at all the other joints. I can mm-hmm. tell you in hips it looks like that older patients are not doing as well as younger patients, and we defined older patients as 65 or greater.
Mm-hmm. So those might be the ones that you want to specifically grow their cells.
Correct.
Not do a same cell. I mean, the idea of a same day is like awesome, right? Fly down and fly back in the same day or the next day?
Yes. I mean, we have patients that come in usually the night before or sometimes mm-hmm. they'll come in early in the morning. We'll take their cells, they'll come back in the afternoon, and then they'll hop back on a plane. So yes, the same day is more convenient for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, what we're talking about is you're going to remove some cells like from their sacrum?
Right.
Right,
so
from the marrow?
We numb up the back of the hip area. We use a needle to take the cells out. They look like thick blood, and then those are processed in our lab to get out the two fractions in the bone marrow that are rich in stem cells, and then give them back to the doctor to be reinjected under guidance into a specific area that afternoon.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. You're listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Dr. Chris Centeno, and we're talking about joint regeneration through the use of stem cells. When you get the needle in and the needle out, is it like getting a shot?
It is. You know, we numb up the hip area pretty well, so most people don't feel much after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, injection back is just like a regular shot. So from the patient's perspective, there's not much difference.
Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't last.
No. You know, they certainly might be sore for a couple of days because we injected some stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
But not like a surgery where you'd obviously be on crutches or going through rehab, that kind of stuff.
And so then if you were having either a knee or a hip with stem cells put in, can you walk on those right away?
You can. We'll offload the knee. Let's say if we're doing the medial compartment, we'll use a medial compartment offloader brace. But what we want them to do is to go down hard for a couple days, and then they can come back and really start their cardiovascular right back up. Now, we don't want them running for 6 weeks, but if all they do for cardiovascular is they're on an elliptical, they can do that from 3 days on.
So could they walk? Just regular walking?
They can. They can walk all they want, yes.
Wow. I mean, just that comparing to a replacement is amazing.
Yeah, pretty different on the activity side afterwards. Obviously, we want our folks to be as active as they feel able. But obviously, for a knee replacement, that's not always the case, depending on a lot of it's just how much pain they're in.
Right. Usually, they're pretty miserable. I visited a person last week in the hospital who just had a knee replacement, and she was screaming for pain meds, and she wasn't due for 2 more hours.
Yeah, well, obviously, if you saw off a bone and saw off a bone and take out the joint and put something else in there, it's a big surgery.
Right, it's going to hurt. Okay, so when a new thing comes along, it's considered experimental. And then it goes through some clinical trials, and then it becomes investigational. And then at some point, if it proves itself, it becomes standard practice. So where is this along that line?
You know, we're moving towards right now, because of some of the philanthropy that we've been able to enjoy, we're moving towards, we have 4 different randomized controlled trials that we're recruiting for right now that patients should know about. So if this isn't something that you can afford, but you're interested in being randomized in a trial to either get the therapy or not get the therapy and wait, which would be the case with these crossover groups, then you can get the treatment for no charge or no cost. And we've obviously had a huge registry, and we've continued to pull that data down, analyze it, and publish it. So where is it along that pathway? Probably about halfway there.
So it's taking longer than you thought to become standard.
You know, yes, but I think, you know, things don't become standard of care until you get those randomized controlled trials.
Sure.
So
how many more people are you looking for?
Oh, these are fairly big trials in 4 different areas: low back, knee arthritis, ACL, and shoulder rotator cuff tears.
Are you looking for 1,000?
So that's a couple hundred patients.
A couple hundred for each?
Not for each, but in total, it'll be about 400 patients for the 4 trials.
Uh-huh. Okay, but are you recruiting for all 4?
We are. We're still recruiting for all 4 right now.
Okay, so could somebody who's listening to this do it?
They could, as long as, now, obviously, with a study, it's a little bit different in that you have to meet certain inclusion criteria. You've got to be A, B, and C, but not D, E, and F.
Uh-huh.
So assuming they meet that inclusion criteria, they would be eligible for the study. And as long as they'd be willing to be randomized so that they'd either get the treatment right away or wait a couple months doing physical therapy, they could get what would amount to $4,000 to $6,000 for the treatment for no cost at all.
That sounds great. Okay, so how would they avail themselves of finding out if they qualify?
So I think you have a link to our website. So they would go to our website, get in touch with one of our patient coordinators, and just state that they have an interest in the study,
mm-hmm.
and they would get them in touch with our research department, and they would put them through their paces to see if they were a candidate. If they were a candidate, they could proceed.
This is really exciting to be part of history changing medical care. I foresee this pretty much eliminating the need for joint replacement, any joint.
I think that's true. I think what we'll see in the future is a move towards trying to treat joints when they first get issues. So early detection of problems, placing stem cells in a joint early to prevent the onset of more severe arthritis, and that's probably how this will go. So I do think we will see a time where joint replacements become very uncommon and are only done in really bad or severe patients where there are things you can't control for, like they had a severe infection in the joint or a car crash where the joint got severely traumatized mm-hmm. and had to be put back together, those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. So what I see is a lot of resistance to adopting this because it's new, it's different, and it costs so much less. Now, one should think that, well, we're trying to get a handle on the healthcare costs, but I'd say really that's not from the treating side. That's from the policy side. On the treating side, we want to charge as much as possible.
Yeah, I think that there's certainly some resistance to this. I mean, really what we're trying to do here, it goes beyond even stem cells. What we're trying to do is to create a new medical specialty that we call interventional orthopedics. So the concept that 20 or 30 years from now, the idea that you would do surgery for almost anything would be silly, that you would want to do that through some sort of needle-based device under guidance because it's less traumatic to the patient and a much quicker recovery. You would be using stem cells or other things to help the tissue repair. So that's the whole goal of what we're trying to do, is really to create a new medical specialty very similar to what we saw in cardiology. When I was in medical school in the 1980s, pretty much every 50-some-year-old man that I admitted to the hospital had a huge scar on his sternum from an open heart surgery. And today, you know, the number of open heart surgeries that are done are down 90% because almost everything can be floated through a catheter by an interventional cardiologist.
Mm-hmm.
And we think the same thing will happen in orthopedics. We'll see the rise of interventional orthopedics and traditional surgical orthopedics will still be done, but only in severe cases. But on a day-to-day basis, surgeries won't be performed.
God, that sounds great. It sounds like a really good change. Now, could you explain why the stem cells give you this beautiful new joint? Because I've seen the befores and afters, a terribly degenerated joint, lots of arthritis, and then stem cells a month later, you have this brand new, looks like an 18-year-old's joint. What is it that the stem cells do?
Yeah, well, just a word of caution. I mean, we certainly have seen evidence of joint repair on MRI. At the same time, we definitely also see patients where what the stem cells are doing is likely cleaning up the joint. So let me kind of back up a little bit and explain a little bit about arthritis. We thought that arthritis really had to do with how bad the x-ray looked or how bad the MRI looked, meaning arthritis was a loss of cartilage and then bone spurs developed. And we still believe that that's what arthritis is. But what's become confusing in the last 10 years is that we see patients with horrible-looking joints that seem to function really well and don't have much pain, and some patients with joints that don't look so bad and they're in severe, horrible pain. So the concept, there's a bit of a disconnect between how bad the picture looks and how well the patient is able to function. So in some of our patients, for instance, with a meniscus tear, we see good evidence of the repair of that tear or an ACL tear. And in some of our patients, they have very severe arthritis, and you can pop an MRI a year later when they have no pain. And the joint physically doesn't look that different, but biochemically inside is likely where the difference occurred. It went from a toxic, nasty stew of chemicals that were pushing the joint towards more and more breakdown to a much, much better environment that can help the joint last and function.
Well, you bring up a really good point is we should not be treating studies. We should be treating patients. There has to be a correlation between what you see on an image and what's going on with the patient.
There has to be. And regrettably, as you know, as we physicians have gotten these pictures and our pictures became more sophisticated, we started to rely on them. But then the research comes out and says, you know what, doc, the picture's not as good as you thought it was.
Are you presenting at medical conferences?
Yes. So I lecture at about 5 or 6 a year. Most notably, this last April, I attended the second Vatican Stem Cell Conference. There's actually, the Vatican puts on a stem cell conference, and I was asked to lecture there. So that's always a fun one because it's obviously focused only on adult stem cells, but a really neat place to have a medical conference.
I would say that sounds fab. Do you find that people are sitting with their arms crossed going, no way, this is space age weirdo stuff, or people are pretty open?
You know, I think most people are pretty open. It depends on the group I'm speaking to.
How about orthopedic surgeons?
Yeah, well, I did grand rounds recently at the Hospital for Special Surgery in Manhattan, which is the nation's oldest orthopedic hospital. And certainly, when I showed some of our before and after MRIs of healed ACLs just after an injection without surgery, there were some skeptics in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I lectured to other physicians, and I think many of them are very open to this. You know, it's interesting that we see a lot of physicians as patients because I think if you're a family doctor or an internist, you've seen the good and the bad of joint replacement. And when it comes time for you to get your joint looked at, you tend to have a little trepidation about whether or not you really want to do something that invasive.
But, you know, the more good outcomes doctor has, the more they're going to talk about it and the more they're going to recommend it to their patients. But we certainly need more people than you doing it.
Yeah, we have about 20 docs around the country that we've trained to do this kind of work right now. And we're adding around 10 to 20 a year right now. So we're getting there. As the data gets better and better, I think you'll see more people jumping on board. And I think also, you know, there's more and more frustration with traditional medicine.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So I think you'll see that changing it too.
So you think you're halfway there in terms of it becoming standard. So, and in my mind, standard means your Medicare or whatever your insurance is going to pay for it. You think it's going to be like 2 or 3 more years?
Yeah, it'll be a number of more years. I think once we have our randomized controlled trials done, I think we'll start to see some insurance coverage happening, and insurance coverage is like anything else. One company decides to do it, and then you can go to the second company and mm-hmm. say, well, you see, those guys did it, mm-hmm. and go from there.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's how you change things, because if it's paid for, then people will do it. Let's talk about how people can get in touch with you through your website, regenix.com, and there are 2 X's.
Yeah, so it's Regenix, R-E-G-E-N-E-X-X, so Regenix, 2 X's, .com. So R-E-G-E-N-E-X-X.com.
It's been great talking to you, and I'd like to end for right now. You've been listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine. I've been with Dr. Chris Centeno.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for making time for me.
Okay,
bye-bye.